OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
How much is Joe Biden banking on his performance at tonight's State of the Union address? And what to expect as the incumbent president tries to frame his 2024 rematch against Donald Trump? Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We are joined today by my colleagues, columnists Bill McGurn and Kim Strassel. The pageantry of the State of the Union address is rooted in a line in the Constitution that says the president shall from time to time give to Congress information of the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. And it isn't necessarily a joint address. The Senate Historians page says that Thomas Jefferson delivered it in writing in 1801, which was the tradition until Woodrow Wilson decided he wanted to go over to Congress in person in 1913. So Bill and Kim, when we are up late tonight, that can be one more thing that we blame on Woodrow Wilson. But Bill, you have participated in the writing of State of the Union addresses as a presidential speechwriter in the White House. Can you just give us a sense of what that process is like from the inside, and what is the goal that the incumbent president is typically trying to accomplish in this big address that he knows is going to get wide viewership across the nation?
Yeah, it's a primetime address, and you have built-in audience of the American people. So even though the president isn't required to go up there and give an address, you know, they used to send a letter up there, none of them can resist the opportunity on camera with all the pageantry to lay out the case. That said, speechwriters always regard it as the worst speech they have to do. That's a bipartisan attitude, because every year, speechwriters get together and say, we're not going to give just a laundry list of the administration's priorities and achievements. We're going to have a theme and a real tight speech. And every year, except, you know, when war is declared or some other huge events, it's a laundry list. So Joe Biden is a little different because he will not only lay out what his priorities are. And the backdrop is it'll be the agenda for his campaign. It's a big primetime introduction to his campaign for re-election. He has a second challenge. He has to prove that he's up to it, that he can, you know, stand there for the 50 minutes it takes to get through. There are little tricks. You want applause, but you kind of want to write some things in a way the other side would have to applaud. Joe Biden hasn't seemed to done that. He's been remarkably kind of acrimonious, I think, you know, and partisan. I'll be interested to see what he does to try to change that tonight. But you generally try to give an uplifting speech around your agenda. And the audience is varied. It's the American people, but it's also our allies and adversaries around the world. It's really everyone. They're trying to see where the president is going to go. So it's a big deal. A lot of work gets involved because, you know, every department of an administration wants to be mentioned, their work, what they're doing. So there's a lot of inputs, and it has to be processed and rolled out in some unifying form, like, you know, the renewal of the American promise or something. And you try to stitch it together in that way. But it's really a beast and goes through a lot of drafts. There's usually a lot of rehearsals with the president practicing in the theater in the White House. And most speechwriters are really glad when it's done.
Kim, what do you expect tonight? For my two cents, I would second what Bill said, that one of the questions will be just President Biden's delivery. I think he wants to go up there and show voters that he is still in fighting shape, especially given all of the polling that suggests that people are worried about his age. He's 81. He wants to be president until he's 86. And also just the polls showing that he is trailing President Biden now in these head-to-head rematches. The Real Clear Politics national average shows Trump up by 1.8 percentage points. And two, I think the message has sunk into the White House that part of what is driving those poll numbers is the state of the economy. People remember how good the economy was under President Trump, the low inflation, the low unemployment, the rising wages, and they want that back. And so I'm curious to see whether Biden will expand more on that theme and try to make some case that his administration is helping people's pocketbooks and their bottom lines. And he did some of that in previous addresses, talking about junk fees and so on. But I'm wondering if we're going to hear more of that tonight.
Sure. And by the way, can I just mention, can everyone hear the relief in Bill's voice that he is no longer doing State of the Union addresses? You make a really good point, Kyle. There is going to be something different about tonight's State of the Union, something that you don't normally look for in a president. One expects a president to get up and be able to get through the State of the Union without any major problems. In fact, there's going to be an enormous focus on Joe Biden's performance tonight. Can he get through it without gaffes, without slurring? Does he look aware of where he is and what he's doing? Does he get his guests' names right? Does he go off script? Just because there is such an emphasis right now on his age and his competency. I think that Bill is on to something, that he's definitely going to attempt to lead with a positive vision and some bragging about what they've done. I think the hard part for this White House is, when he lays out that list of things, is it credible and believable to Americans who are listening to this? So I heard someone in the White House say, gave a little preview and said, you know, the president's going to talk about record job creation and the strongest economy in the world and increases in wages and household wealth and lower prescription drug prices and energy costs. Okay, that all sounds wonderful on paper, but one of the problems this White House has had is that nobody feels that. There are certainly some statistics to suggest some good news in the economy, but that has largely been sapped out of American sentiment by not just pocketbook woes because of inflation, but also because they're looking around, and I think they're more broadly reading into their sort of sense of well-being or lack of well-being, all this other mayhem happening, crime, issues at the border, etc. But sadly, what I most expect from this speech, and it is in keeping with prior Biden speeches, as Bill suggested, they can be very dark at times. And to the extent the president intends to use this to frame the coming election, I expect this to be a blame speech. Expect the president to blame high prices on businesses, corporate greed. And why not? By the way, he's already blamed Putin and the Fed and COVID and supply chains. He's going to blame Republicans for a supposed loss of basic rights and bang on about abortion, for instance, and in vitro fertilization. He's going to blame Congress for the border mess and claim that it's because they have failed to pass his Ukraine-Israel funding bill that we still have tens of thousands of people pouring across the border. And most worrisome, I think he's going to pivot some and potentially blame Israel for ongoing upheaval in the Middle East and try to use this speech to push them to a ceasefire as a way of placating his left. So I would say in a speech, I mean, I think you might get 20% uplifting, 80% fire and brimstone.
Hang tight. We'll be right back with more on this in a moment.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Welcome back. On the point about making a difference in Americans' bottom line, there's an interesting fact sheet put out by the White House on Tuesday. And it says that the president is launching a new strike force on unfair and illegal pricing, co-chaired by the Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission. And it goes on to talk about this stuff like ending excessive credit card late fees and junk fees and so forth. And Bill, I expect what the White House is doing here with this fact sheet is trying to set up some of the framing that the president is going to use tonight. But I guess I have a couple thoughts. One is that in a free market economy, the phrase illegal pricing rings a little bit strange in my ears. And then number two, I mean, is this really what the head of the executive branch of the United States government is going to go before the American people and say is among the great problems facing this nation is credit card late fees? I mean, to use a a word that was maybe not coined, but circulated by President Biden lately. I mean, this strikes me as the shrinkflation of the United States presidency.
Yes, you're exactly right. I think it gets back to kind of what Kim alluded to. You know, Joe Biden's views often are not only just dark, but I think he has no private sector experience, maybe with a law firm for a few years, but no really experience with any profit-making business. So when things don't go his way, he just sees villains and dark forces, you know, giving us less Oreos in our boxes, less cereal in our boxes, less Doritos in our bags. I think he only understands that these evil forces out to get him. And it shows a very primitive understanding of the market. And it works up to a point, but I don't think you can sell a presidential policy on this kind of approach. There's no responsibility for his spending or anything. And I think President Biden kind of implicitly views the government as superior in its spending choices to the market. You know, we leave it up to individual choice. And I think that's going to come through tonight. I think it's consistent with other things. There's always a villain. And I think Joe Biden casts himself as sort of a superhero, slaying these imaginary villains and oblivious to the damage he's causing with his like energy policies, his border policies, his spending policies. He just thinks they don't have an effect. You can spend whatever you want from the government and has no effect. And you can pursue regulations on business that will have no effect. It's a very primitive and dark view.
The other thing I'm looking at in order to try to read the tea leaves of what might be coming tonight is the list of guests who are reportedly en route to the House chamber there in Washington for the State of the Union. One of them is the Prime Minister of Sweden, who is in the midst of getting his country into the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, the NATO alliance. And Kim, you touched a little bit on foreign policy in your overview of what you think is coming. But I think the inclusion of NATO and Sweden here is interesting, in part because we don't have a great sense of what Donald Trump's foreign policy is supposed to look like in a second term, and particularly with regard to NATO. Sometimes he sounds like he thinks the U.S. should just up and leave NATO, or say that countries who aren't hitting the NATO target of spending 2% of their economy on defense should be left out of the NATO alliance's self-defense treaty. And so, I don't know, it will be interesting to see how much President Biden, A, brings that up, but B, also tries to explicitly frame it as, I am a safe pair of hands, and this guy that I'm running against, whether he's going to use the name Donald Trump or not, is not the safe pair of hands that you're looking for, particularly given that foreign policy is a dividing line in the Republican Party. And many of those voters who've been on Team Nikki Haley so far, that is part of what's motivating them to not want to vote for Donald Trump.
I think we should definitely view the invitation to the Prime Minister of Sweden in a couple ways. One of them, which might be a sort of silent poke at Donald Trump, given that there was some news recently about how Trump had told some NATO member that his belief was that if they weren't contributing their appropriate share to the NATO alliance, that Putin ought to just invade them. So this is a way of instead showing that under Joe Biden, the NATO alliance is strong. So I think there is a compare and a contrast element to this, certainly, if you are thinking about State of the Union in the context of the coming election. But I think there's a more immediate reason for this as well, too. Obviously, the president's request for Ukraine and Israel funding has been mired, in particular, in the House. There's a big push on at the moment, and this is a very important moment in that debate. There are a number of Republicans, a majority of Republicans, still want that money to go through in some form or fashion. There are discussions at the moment about whether or not, for instance, you keep in the military money for Ukraine, but you take out the economic support that's in there. That's been a source of some of the complaints on the right. Either way, these Republicans have made pretty clear to Speaker Mike Johnson that they want to see this happen, and that if Republicans won't do it on their own terms, that these Republicans would be willing to work with Democrats to get it over the line. So I think the president is probably intending to use this speech tonight to reinforce the importance of keeping NATO strong, what's at stake with Putin's ongoing war in Ukraine, and the need for America to work with its allies.
A couple other issues I'm keeping an eye out for that I think Democrats and President Biden intend to run on in November. One of them is abortion, the end of the Roe v. Wade ruling. That has helped many Democratic candidates in the 2022 elections and in special elections, Supreme Court elections in Wisconsin, in Pennsylvania. Again, a couple of President Biden's guests at the State of the Union. One is a Alabaman whose in vitro fertilization treatments were canceled recently. And one is Kate Cox, who I'm getting this list from an NPR report, Kate Cox, who was denied an emergency abortion by the Texas Supreme Court. And so that is something that I definitely expect President Biden to bring up. Again, we don't really know what President Trump's policy in a second term would be. There's some reporting that he is thinking about endorsing a 16-week restriction nationwide, but we don't have that officially yet. And then here's another one, Bill. Kenan Jones, a middle school teacher in Plymouth, Minnesota, whose student loan debt was forgiven, will also be in the audience. And that goes back to this point about trying to show that he is helping the bottom lines of Democratic voters. But Bill, that one I think is interesting because it seems like President Biden is trying to keep the enthusiasm of young voters, young Democrats in particularly, up. But he also needs these independent voters, these swing voters. And I think there are a lot of people, if they are watching a call out of somebody for whom President Biden forgave their student loans, will be thinking, well, gee, was I a sucker for paying back my student loans? I could have bought a bigger TV to watch the State of the Union address on.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. On the one hand, when you single out someone, you humanize the issue. You know, you see a fellow American and it humanizes the issue. On the other hand, his student debt relief was never that popular precisely because other people paid. And they say, why should these guys not pay when they took out so many loans? I want to mention some other guests, too, because it's interesting who's not there. Navalny's widow declined to come, as did, I think, Mrs. Zelensky. That's interesting to me because I think they would have been powerful voices for pushing the aid bill through. They might be worried about Joe Biden standing in the polls, being too associated with him if Republicans take over. And then I think the biggest group is going to be the families of the six Americans held in Gaza by Hamas. They killed two other Americans they had hostage, and there's 17 of them. They're going to be scattered around. So I think the danger for Joe Biden going forward, not just at the State of the Union, but at other appearances, is a pro-Hamas outburst. And he's going to really have to thread the needle. There are these people in the audience, and I think they will be very sympathetic to the crowd of Americans watching, both Democrats and Republicans. And I'll be interesting to see if Joe Biden acknowledges them. I think they're coming. They're very well organized with yellow ribbons and so forth. I don't think he can just ignore them. So it's kind of interesting who's there and who isn't. When I was writing for President Bush, since all the years I was writing, the war was going on, we usually had the family of someone who lost their life in action. And one year we had an Iraqi mom of a soldier and an American mom of a soldier who was killed. Very powerful. So they can be very powerful, but as you suggest with loans, they're making a statement too. It's about going forward and what you think are kind of your strengths.
Hang tight. We'll be right back after one more break.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Plus, save time by completing security questionnaires with Vanta AI. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ. That's VANTA.com/WSJ.
Don't forget, you can reach the latest episode of Potomac Watch anytime. Just ask your smart speaker, play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. Let's save a little breath here for the Republican response to the State of the Union. Always a difficult job after the pageantry of the president in the House chamber there. Kim, this year it's going to be delivered by Katie Britt, the senator from Alabama, sworn in 2023, 42 years old. so roughly half Joe Biden's age. Can you tell us a little bit more about Katie Britt and what do you think she's intending to say?
Well, I think that you just said the most important thing about Katie Britt and why she was chosen. She is half Joe Biden's age. She's 42 years old. And the clear goal here is not only to have a woman on stage, you know, to sort of highlight the diversity of the Republican Party, as it were, but also just to make that comparison side by side between an elderly man who has been struggling and a more vibrant young senator. She's a freshman. I think it's notable and interesting that she's from Alabama, obviously, which has been in the news because of the fight over in vitro fertilization. In fact, the president is having, as one of his guests, a woman who had her IVF canceled in Alabama after that Supreme Court decision. And obviously, Alabama lawmakers are working on changing that scenario. So she may talk about that. But I think the big issue here is obviously going to be to try to set the record straight on how Americans really do feel on the economy and some of the other havoc and problems that are happening in the country and who is to blame for them. So expect a lot of focus on the border and the policies that Biden implemented that got us to this place. Expect some real focus on crime. Speaker Mike Johnson, for instance, is having a number of New York police officers as some of his guests. And so I think there's going to be some talk, not just about how Americans feel unsafe, but how under progressive policies, police officers and law enforcement have lost support and that their jobs are becoming definitely more difficult and unsafe. Talk about spending and the current debt, although I should note that Republicans have not managed to do anything yet to really remedy that situation and play their own role in getting there. But this is going to be a Republican opportunity again to criticize the president, criticize the current state of the country. I think the interesting question is what, if anything, Katie Britt presents as a policy agenda on the other side. It's a very difficult job right now because, you know, while Donald Trump is close to being the nominee and is, for most part, the putative head of the party, it's a little unclear exactly what his agenda is. And Republicans themselves and the Senate and the House are all over the map in terms of their ideas. So I think it might be some very vague stuff about, you know, a sunnier side of the mountain, but maybe without a lot of specifics.
Thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. You can email us at pwpodcast@wsj.com. If you like the show, please hit that subscribe button, and we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.